ladies and gentlemen, tonight, the reigning, defending, undisputed, universal heavyweight champion,
Wildcat Radio 2.0. Bear down, you beautiful people.
What's up, everybody? This is Wildcat Radio 2.0. I'm Adam Green. He's Brett Berry. And the Arizona Wildcats basketball team, Brett, confirmed that they received a notice of allegations from the NCAA. Might as well just get right to it. That's something that I think we all knew was coming sooner or later. And, like, I guess it's here now, so that's something.
They're on notice with allegations.
Yeah.
We knew it was coming eventually, but even now it's just like the, I don't know if we want to call it the beginning of the end or the end of the beginning, right? Because realistically, you know, there's a whole process. We don't even know at this point. I mean, I'm sure we'll find out in the coming days or weeks whether it's like a level one allegation or level two, and there's dramatically different outcomes based on that. But we don't really know much more than that the inevitable has arrived.
Right.
The real question is, what is that going to look like? And I think we've talked about on this show that I think anybody that knows exactly what's coming is flat out lying.
No, yeah, but you have to think now, Arizona, like the notice, they confirmed that they've gotten the notice, but they're not saying what's in it because they're saying, we're recording this on Friday, by the way. That's when that was confirmed that they got it. But they're just saying that they don't feel like they have to legally, they shouldn't, or they can't, or anything like that. They're coming up with any reason why they're not going to share what's in there. Now, we know what has happened to some of the other schools. Like, a lot of people think Oklahoma State's the most likely, like the most apt comparison, and they basically received a one-year postseason ban and on probation, and that's like for their level one. And like everyone can say, like, no one knows exactly what's in there, but you have to think Arizona has an idea. Like, it's been 3 years. You know, they. I imagine they have the majority of the evidence that the NCAA has. If they're probably using a lot of like the testimony that was in court that Arizona knows about, they probably use the scheme. You know, I don't imagine the NCAA has more information than Arizona does in terms of what actually transpired. So in that regard, you have to think, like, this wasn't a surprise to Arizona. It's not a surprise to Arizona fans. It's not a surprise to us. Like, we've never come on this show and said, oh, they'll be fine. Nothing's going to happen. Like, something was going to happen. The NCAA was going to do something. It was only a matter of time. And, like, to your point, or you said earlier, like, when you started, like, finally. Because if you're Arizona, you've gone the last 3 years with this cloud hanging over your head. Now, granted, this isn't over with because we don't know what's in the notice and we don't know how that's going to affect the program. But just this cloud was hanging over them. It's like, you knew it was coming. Just let it happen. Rip the Band-Aid off. Because sooner or later, something was going to happen. So this might be the beginning of that, at least the next step in this process. So, like, is Arizona going to get out of this with nothing happening and a slap on the wrist? Not likely. You know, because even if you can make the case that Sean Miller had no idea what was going on, it was still his program. These things still happened. Book Richardson still did what he did. But to say that we have any idea of what that's going to look like, like, we don't. Like, we're going to hope for the best. We're Arizona fans. We don't want anything bad to happen. But something will happen. We just don't know what.
Yeah, and I think the cynic in me, if I want to talk myself into being pessimistic, I would say that Arizona is just a big enough program that's not too big to really throw the book at, to make an example out of. No pun intended.
Yeah.
But, you know, I could also would not be surprised if, you know, they got a level two allegation, you know, notice of allegation based on the known evidence that we have to date. Like, if the NCAA is just working from, like, is literally submitting the scheme as its evidence, you know, that ain't it. And even I think Oklahoma State, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they're appealing and going through the appeal process, which takes a while, right?
I would assume so. There's no reason not to appeal, I think, if you're innocent. Like, if you believe that you're innocent anyway, if you have enough evidence to say, hey, like, this was like a rogue assistant, which, whether you believe that or not, I'm not saying I do. But if you think you can make that case, then why wouldn't you appeal this, whatever it is?
Yeah, and Arizona's, I mean, even if, unless they get a really light slap on the wrist, they'll probably say, oh, I'm so sorry, and take their penalty and go away.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the most likely outcome. I think it's somewhere in between the harshest and the lightest. probably towards the harsher side, at least on initial, levying. And then you can see what an appeal process goes. But I think there's unknowns of what, you know, counter evidence does Arizona have to present. Because, like, the scheme was literally, like, a one-sided portrayal, and it wasn't even... It had things that were certainly not a good look at a minimum, but it wasn't exactly like...
There was no silver bullet smoking gun in there, no.
No, and if that's literally the best case you can make, it's more like it goes back to the language with the NCAA where even if Sean Miller is not unknowing, he is still ultimately held accountable in some form.
Institutional control. Like, yeah, he's supposed to be in charge.
Exactly. And it's how much do they want to make an example out of Arizona or not. So... We know at least the shoe hasn't dropped yet, but we've seen it's been released and it's falling through the air.
I've never thought of that metaphor, that phrase like that. But no, and that's where it's at. And obviously, as this goes forward, we're going to talk about it. We're all really interested, but I do think from an Arizona fan perspective, probably, again, I don't think the school or Miller or any of them are surprised. This has been an issue for 3 years. They knew it was coming. They've seen a lot of the evidence they know of, and they did their own investigations, too. Miller knows what he did or didn't do as they've gone forward with this process. So, like, it's a big deal in that, okay, finally, but it's not a big deal in that we don't know, one, what it says, or two, how it's going to play out. Because, of course, whatever it says, Arizona is probably going to appeal. Now, where that leads, who knows? One thing I do wonder, though, is if the COVID situation will impact what the NCAA does, because obviously all these schools with huge programs are going to be struggling financially, and it shouldn't impact things. Like, if Arizona cheated and they have proof, then Arizona should get punished the way, whatever is appropriate for that. But I wonder if the NCAA might say, well, you know, you missed that. You're going to not have any fans this season. So you're going to lose out on that money. You're going to have, you know, you missed out on the last tournament. Like, so basically you've gone 2 years in a row without an NCAA tournament, one due to COVID, one because the team wasn't very good. You know, and then they'll say, okay, we'll just maybe some probation, maybe a loss of a scholarship or two, and that's it, so as to not totally cripple the program. Because if you cripple Arizona basketball, obviously you're crippling the University of Arizona at this point. And again, that's not the NCAA to make that decision. Like, if Arizona cheated and it's there, then they should absolutely get destroyed basketball program-wise. It should happen. But I wonder if without a mountain of evidence that says, yes, Miller and Arizona are absolutely guilty of this, if they might go a little bit lighter just to say, okay, like, it's bad for everybody. We're going to make an example out of you, but your punishment is kind of already baked into just the climate that's happened over the last couple of years. Like, maybe I'm just overthinking it, but.
I mean, it's kind of like the NCAA with all of this is kind of like the, you know, the police officer walking into the speakeasy in Prohibition and being like, he's shocked, I tell you, to find out there's drinking going on here. When he's, you know, it's just another example of the seedy business that college sports unfortunately is. And until the NCAA becomes less analogous to FIFA as an organization and they just, you know, get a little smarter about things, a little smarter about enforcement, smarter with rules, smarter with monitoring and accountability. It's it's just the what we're going to have to deal with. I think if you're an Arizona fan, an Arizona program, I think you're hoping that anything less than a postseason ban, you're probably content with.
Yeah.
And is certainly survivable. And that's where it becomes very foggy and muddy with, we don't know all of the evidence, and we certainly don't know the counter evidence. You know, back in the ESPN DeAndre Ayton story days, there was a lot of rumors of there's actually recordings that may not sound good, but actually exonerate Sean Miller in terms of, like, specifically DeAndre Ayton. Of, you know, and there's, like, I think I've speculated on the show that, like, I'm guessing it's something like, I'm not paying $10,000 a month for DeAndre Ayton. You think I'm going to give that to, Brian Bowen, because that's the most likely player that's being talked about. And, like, that can both not sound good, but also be, like, counter to what that was, the supposed public story, right? So it really comes down to the logic, if we can call it that, and decision-making of the NCAA. And if you're trying to predict that, you know, that's just a fool's.
Well, it doesn't exist. That's the thing. Yeah. You can't predict their logic because they don't have any. And I guess you have to look at, too, what evidence does, like, what does Arizona know? And it's hard to imagine that if they knew, and I I'm sure Sean Miller did what he's been accused of doing by a lot of people, that Arizona, I mean, would he be able to keep that from them this long? Like, there would have to be some sort of a trail. Like, and if you're Sean Miller, why would, like, for the last 3 years you've been doing this and putting up that fight? Now, that doesn't mean he's innocent, of course. I'm not trying to say it. But it's like there's so much going on here that we just don't know. And if you're Arizona and you really, like, you are absolutely confident that you've done everything the right way and this was just rogue stuff happening, then you can make the case to the NCAA, who might just be like, yeah, well, our evidence isn't as strong because I would hope for the NCAA there's more than we've seen. I guess I'll put it that way, than we know about. Because now, granted, they don't have to, this isn't a court of law. They don't have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. That's not how the NCAA works. But if they're going to come down hard on a program like Arizona, who is, like you said, they're plenty big enough. They're not Duke, they're not Kansas, they're not North Carolina, but they're a plenty big enough program. If you're going to come down on them, one, you'd hope that Arizona's ready to fight back if they have reason to do so. But you better hope that the NCAA has legitimate cause to do what they're doing. Because, again, like, they don't have to, it's not going to a jury. This isn't a trial. But for 3 years, they've been building this case, and now we finally get to see what it means to them. Like, what did they decide, or what did they see through Arizona basketball with Book Richardson and possibly playing players and Sean Miller and this and that? We'll finally figure out or learn what the NCAA thinks happened. And then, of course, I'm curious to see how Arizona responds because, again, they've been waiting for this moment. They've been waiting for this NOA. It's finally here. And now it's their turn to maybe fight back a little bit if they think they should.
Yeah. You know, call me a snarky, cynical bastard, but maybe if you're an Arizona fan, maybe the revelations of a few months back to we're Duke, we don't have to cheat around like Zion, maybe has an impact on whatever sanctions are coming Arizona's way, because if you're going to level a sanction for Arizona based on what we know
publicly,
you know, suddenly it's, you know, but I don't think they want to give Duke a postseason ban. Let me put it that way.
No, I don't imagine so. But we'll see, because it is the NCAA, and there's no consistency. We know that, and that's what kind of has you nervous here. Like, it could have you nervous or optimistic for Arizona, because, like, maybe they're, like, nervous because it's like, oh, God, they could do anything. They could just drop the hammer on Arizona, and then a Duke situation would be like, oh, well, we'll find a reason to say it's different. The NCAA could do that. They've done stuff like that, you know? At the same time, they could turn that around. It's like, yeah, well, we did that to Oklahoma State, but we do know Arizona's one of the premier programs, so we'll go a little bit lighter on them. Like, it could work out in their favor, too. We just don't know. And one thing we do know is, as the basketball season starts to get closer and Sean Miller does more press conferences, he's going to be asked about it, and he's going to give the same answer that he cannot talk about it. He will not talk about it. The same answer he's given the last 3 years, or at least ever since he gave that one statement when he was like, I'm not leaving, I'm not going anywhere, I didn't pay anyone, I've never done that. But he did have a press conference earlier this week. It worked out where that was scheduled for the day the rumor of the NOA came out. And he did say quite a few things basically about the roster, knowing that he said it's like his least experienced roster he's ever had, which makes sense. They've replaced so much from what they had last season. But also he talked about the three-guard line as James Akinjo, the type of player he is. Like, it's a lot of, I think, what we've talked about in that it's a really intriguing mix of players and talent. But we just don't know what it's going to look like because so many of them are new.
Yeah, I think he called it the roster his least experienced roster in the, you know, which for somebody like Sean Miller, if you go back to where his bread and butter back in the Xavier days was more like building a team that in his image rather than the five-star guys. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something to be said for maybe he may operate better in terms of long-term success over a season with, you know, unfinished balls of clay that he can shape rather than the guys that already have it in their head of what they want to do and show to scouts. But, you know, I think there were some interesting takeaways in there. I think it, like the James Akinjo commentary where I think we've even talked about, I feel like he has a little bit of Mark Lyons, that East Coast mentality. And I think he compared him to Holloway.
To Holloway.
You know, I think that kind of validates some of the things that we kind of inherently were already believing. But, you know, it's I'm just ready for basketball season to start, to be perfectly honest. And I want to see Kerr Carissa get on the floor, man.
Yeah.
Throw a lob to Christian Coloco, and then all will be well in the world.
Well, and then Jordan Brown, too. He won the first gold jersey, which means the best week of practice. And he's a guy that you kind of forget about because he did sit out the entire year, was a five-star recruit, was at Nevada, didn't do much there, but he was playing behind all these veteran players, good players. So he's one of those guys like Arizona. I don't know if you saw Andy Katz. He works for NCAA.com. He put out his Pac-12 standings prediction. Of course, he had ASU at number one because they're a popular pick for – I think they're the pick for a lot of people. Like, they're talented. They've got a good roster. But it's like people want to put them at the top. He's like, look how smart I am. I've got ASU number one. And I think he had Arizona number eight in the Pac-12, which was – that's low. You know, and I'm not going to complain about ASU being one so much as I'd complain about Arizona being number eight, because I think ASU is going to be good. But Arizona, there's so many unknowns, but you look at this roster. You mentioned Kerr Carissa to Christian Coloco. Those are two guys who could be much better than people anticipate. Coloco with growth from his freshman to sophomore year, and Carissa just being ready to play. People are really excited about him, his shooting ability. Jamal Baker, who might be projected to start at the two guard this year. He was not great last year, but he was dealing with a knee injury, and he's flashed potential as a ball handler, as a shooter, as a defender. And, of course, you have Terrell Brown, who's a senior coming over, grad transfer. Like, there's so many things to like about this team on paper. It just hasn't been proven on the floor. And that's where it's like, prediction-wise, even Miller, he kind of, when he hedges, like, yeah, this is the least experienced team I've ever had. It's like, well, I guess, you know, that's true. And you don't get the beauty of, like, a long, extended non-conference, kind of like football. You don't have that time to integrate those things. But that doesn't mean the team is bad. It just means they have work to do to become the team that they can be. So, like, but I'm with you. I'm excited for basketball. I mean, we're Arizona fans. Of course we're excited for basketball. But similar to, like, anything else, I guess, it's the NOA. We don't know how to play out. This roster, we don't know how it's going to play out. But at least both appear to be on track to do something. You know?
Yeah.
And one is better than the other, I think. But, you know, it's like you just like to see progress. And this could be a team that progresses. And once they, similar to football we've talked about, just get on the field, get on the court in basketball's case, and grow. Like, that's what I want to see.
Yeah. And, can I talk about that? The Cats putting ASU at the top, and, like, I think you put them in there, like, dark horses for the Final Four. It reminded me of a few years back when, was it Herb Street for ASU football?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In the BCS Bowls, and it's like, and then you end up going, like, but were they 500 that year or something? You're right. ASU has there's a lot of talent on that roster, but it's all loaded on the perimeter, and they have absolutely nothing in the middle, right?
Yeah.
And I think if you're going to do over-under on Pac-12 finish, I would take the over of Arizona in eighth place, and I'd put a lot of money on that and feel real confident in it.
When was the last time what we thought might be a fairly talented Arizona team was flying this much under the radar, too? Like, I think this season, kind of having one, it's already weird enough. But if you're ASU, right, you have Josh Christopher, you have Remy Martin came back. Like, this is your best chance in a long time to be really relevant and really good. What if it doesn't happen in this wonky basketball season? You know, I know, like, players could come back for another year. They're not going to count it against them. But you think Josh Christopher's coming back? You think Remy Martin's coming back for a fifth season? Like, no, this is their chance. You know? And, like, there's a lot of pressure in this shortened season that's just crazy for everyone to get it done. And Arizona, I mean, Arizona has that pressure too. Miller talked about that, the pressure of being at Arizona. They're always thinking Final Four. And, you know, I get that. Like, but fans are not going into this season saying it's Final Four or bust. And maybe I don't, like, I'd rather have that feeling because that means you have that expectation that this is an elite roster. But for Arizona, for Sean Miller, this might be the first time in a while where it's just like, just throw the ball out there and be as good as you can be and continue to grow the program. It's almost like when he first came to Arizona where it's like, okay, you got to rebuild. Now, it's not a rebuilding from a disaster. I mean, last year, Arizona was decent, you know, and this Miller's been around for a while now. But there's not that pressure from, I think, the fan base to, yeah, you better make a Final Four this season. Yeah, and I don't think that's there, and I think that could help them.
Well, I think two things. One, if ASU does perform as Andy Katz thinks, and this is ASU's best shot to make a Final Four, if they do, there's 0% chance Bobby Hurley is back next year. He'll go take another big job, right? So, like, this literally might be it, ASU fans. Or you're going to have a decent team and then probably have Hurley maybe for another couple years.
Yeah.
But if, you know, he's going to take the first plane to 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 the Carolinas as soon as one of those guys decides to shuffle off into retirement. And then in terms of, I think you asked the question of like the last time Arizona had so much, you know, uncertainty and where they were figured. I don't know if there's ever been a roster. Gosh, maybe going back to the. I even think of like the Russ Pennell year, but I think then you still even knew what you had.
Yeah, you had Budinger on that team. You had Jordan Hill.
Yeah, because like you've had a couple of years where the roster maybe you didn't have super high expectations, but you generally knew what you had. Like I'm thinking of like the Ryan Anderson year.
Yeah, it was a solid team. Back. You knew you had some players on that team.
But those were you had that was like a high floor, low ceiling team, right? Like this is just nobody exactly knows. Because there's so many Euro guys on there.
Well, and just guys in new roles, not just Euro guys, but you have Akinjo who has played, but on a different roster. Now you have Jordan Brown, who's getting his first chance at a big role. Like everything's an unknown other than Ira Lee.
I doubt most national media people are thinking through at the roster and looking at Jordan Brown and James Akinjo. Cause that, you know, there's how many hundred NCAA teams, like they're not thinking that through and, they just think of Jordan Brown averaged 3 points a game at Nevada playing 4 minutes as a freshman, so he's not adding anything. But like he was a five-star guy, so like we still don't know what he's going to be. But it sounds like the early returns from practice and from Sean Miller is he's going to be a pretty good value add guy, right?
Yeah.
And honestly, I think how he goes, so goes the ceiling for this team to a large extent. Because if you can get that consistent post play, I think you have a pretty good sense actually of what you're going to get out of Azulis. I think you have enough intriguing talent, but enough volume of intriguing talent at the other position groups.
And the perimeter and the guard play, yeah.
Yeah, and then you know what you're getting in Akinjo. That, like, between upside and volume, I think you're going to have a decent roster. But it kind of depends on Jordan Brown and a step forward from Koloko to really not be, you know, a poor man's ASU with intriguing talent on the perimeter and nothing down low, right?
Yeah, yeah. So that's basketball. There's obviously the season is we're about, a month away from when that's supposed to start up. So that's cool. Hopefully they can continue tracking that way. And obviously if anything changes with the NOA, we'll talk about that. But Brett, you know, between NFL, college, the baseball playoffs, we're in the World Series right now. You have college football. You have basketball starting up again soon. Like there's no shortage of games to watch. And with thousands of lines available on all your favorite sports and events, you can turn to your game day into payday with MyBookie. Brett, are you the type of guy who likes to back the big favorites?
I mean, my team's usually like a normal bettor.
Yeah. So then consider putting a couple in a parlay for a much bigger payout. Because not only do parlays make meaningless games exciting, but more importantly, they give you a chance to turn ordinary bets into a real moneymaker. Sounds good, right?
Making meaningless games exciting? I was already going to be excited about Arizona and Colorado in football.
But also, don't forget the underdogs, Brett, because they also have a ton of value. And the thing about the NFL is that underdogs are never really dogs on Sunday because every team truly has a chance to win, and you do too. So game spreads, championship futures, and player prop bets, it's never too late to get in on the action and start turning your sports knowledge, or lack of, you don't always have to know what you're doing to win your bets, into actual cash in your wallet. So sign up at MyBookie, and then when you do, use promo code OVERTIME to claim a deposit match dollar for dollar all the way up to $1,000. It's bonus designed to give you a little help and a head start on your winning season. So remember, that's promo code OVERTIME for you to claim your bonus when you make your deposit. So stacked UFC cards, presidential prop bets, all the major sports and more. Sign up today to begin your winning season exclusively at MyBookie. And Brett, we talked a little about football there, but I think, numbers especially too, we're going to bring on a guest, Rob Bowron from Sharp College Football, right after this break. All right, we're back and happy to be joined by Rob Bowron, who you may know from Wildcat Radio, 12-Pack Radio, does the Sharp College Football, the beta rank and everything. He's the guy who, whether you think your team is good or bad, he'll tell you the truth because computers don't lie. Rob, welcome to the show.
I'm happy to be. It's been a while since I did an actual Wildcat Radio, and I'm excited to be back and talk some Arizona.
Right, right. And that's what we have you here for. Before you say something here, I just got to, like, Rob, I feel like I saw a tweet of yours earlier in the week where you basically said, like, you're over people using their team's weaknesses and calling it a strength. And this is after I wrote an article saying Arizona football's going to be pretty good. Part of that article mentioned how no one knows how good or bad this defense may be, so it may not be a real issue. I felt attacked by that tweet. Was that in any way related to me?
No, I mean, so Arizona fans actually aren't that bad. I mean, I feel like Arizona fans have been beaten a little bit into submission following the first 2 years with Kevin Sumlin, you know, and some of the misfit of, I would say, both the staff and Khalil Tate to the system. But no, I mean, that's like, I mean, their fan bases, I think, that have hit the point where they're either close enough to having like really high expectations or like, middle of the road expectations. That like they're starting to turn. Like, I mean, I'll give you an example. Like, there are a lot of Arizona State fans that actually think their offensive line, which was nightmarishly bad last year, is just going to be like a strength to the team because they're bringing most everyone back from it. And when you look at the tape last year, and then, you know, they'll say like, oh, we've added these, you know, grad transfers, you know, one's from Stanford and, you know, one's from Texas A&M. And I mean, these guys weren't playing on what at A&M and Stanford weren't actually very good lines if you look at the tape. So it's like one of those. Like with Arizona, I don't feel like anybody is doing one of those. Like, actually, the fact that our special teams is really bad is going to be really good for the team.
But like you know, Adam mentioned you do beta rank. How did I think part of that negativity is losing Colin Schooler and Tony Fields fairly publicly, you know, just before the 2020 season, if we're calling it that, started. So I guess my question to you is, as the data guru in beta rank, how much does replacing Anthony Pandy and Tony Fields with, or Colin Schooler and Tony Fields with Anthony Pandy and a sack of flour impact our win total?
So I guess I don't have time, unfortunately, to mess around with a lot of the returning production numbers, but they're not like the returning production numbers on their own are not as predictive as you think. And so they're a part of the model. I have also actually found that, you know, thus far, not messing around with those numbers has worked pretty well in predicting the college football games we've actually had. Okay. So while some people may say like, oh, like it's not as accurate as it could be, like I've done better than Vegas in predicting college football games without having to go through and manually adjust them. So I would say though, I mean, it's definitely a concern. I mean, it's absolutely like, I think that you have to take into account. I mean, the tough thing is, you know, there are things that the model clearly doesn't see. I mean, it doesn't see Schooler leaving. It doesn't see Fields leaving. I mean, I feel like Scotty Young is less of a loss. I mean, I know that there are like Scotty Young fans out there, but I mean, Scotty Young had a pretty good freshman year, and then it was a lot of downhill since. And you could also, I think the main thing is just that it doesn't see the change in the defensive coaching staff. I don't know. It also doesn't see, you know, like it doesn't see the addition of, I mean, Aaron Blackwell got a little more publicity, you know, with his transfer in. But the one that I'm more excited about is Lopez,
right,
on the defensive line, right? Like, I mean, Pro Football Focus really liked what they saw out of him on tape. I mean, he's just a guy that, you know, kind of went unnoticed out of high school, but really blossomed in New Mexico State. So, I mean, there are things that the model sort of, like, how it's going to wash out because those losses are there, you know, that's, I mean... And we should probably, like, if we're going to do, like, we should probably, like, address the defense, like, in total, right? But, like, the fact that, like, I mean, I think for Arizona, like, the defensive staff that, you know, someone had to put together, you know, coming into his, you know, when he was hired late in the cycle. It was hard to put, it's hard to put together a staff. I mean, if you look at the staff that, you know, they just put together Colorado when they got stuck late in the cycle having to make a hire. You know, it's tough to put a staff together like that. And I would also say, like, I don't think someone keeping Yates and then putting together the Island of Misfit Toys defensive coaching staff with, like, a community college, you know, coach for your defensive line coach that turned out couldn't coach defensive line, you know, like one of Marcel Yates' buddies coaching linebackers, you know, like the entire middle of the defense, if you go back to, like, the last 2 years, like, couldn't cover. I mean, I mean that for the linebackers and the safeties.
Oh,
like, poorly coached and not in the right positions. You know, like that kind of thing. Like, I don't expect Arizona's coaching staff to be like a home run. Like, this, they didn't go out and hire like Andy Avalos that like knocks it out of the park like Oregon did. But I expect him to be an improvement. And I think if you look like at every level of the coaching staff that they brought in, I mean, from Stan Egan on the defensive line, I mean, that is a clear upgrade over Uiagalelei there. Like, I mean, I think back to like last year, like the crazy, like the, I mean, if you want to talk about like the craziness of it, like you remember last year when, I mean, it was pretty obvious Yates was, you know, limping along and people were saying like, no, no, like the defensive line coach is going to be the defensive coordinator. I'm like, what are you talking about? This guy hasn't called plays since he was at a community college. Like, that's clearly not the direction they're going to go.
To be fair, he only punched one person on the sideline during a game.
I was at that game and I somehow missed that.
You were watching the action on the field?
I should have been watching. The action on the field was not all that great.
Yeah, you know who's the person that made out best in that game? The guy that got punched because he wasn't watching the defense.
It's true.
But like we see the numbers, right? Like BetaRank does a great job. It's a fun way to look at things. Like Arizona fans, a lot of media who watched Arizona just look at the roster, look at the team, and just how bad things have been. It's like, well, it's not any better. And Brad and I on this show, everybody who's listened knows that we're not saying Arizona is going to be the best in the Pac-12. Like, they're closer to the bottom of the conference than they are to the top. But I think BetaRank has Arizona for 1.5 expected wins, but that doesn't take into account, I assume, the coaching staff defensively just changing over. It probably has some Grant Gunnell in there because he was part of the team last season. But if you're looking at BetaRank, because obviously you seem a little bit higher on Arizona going into this season, BetaRank doesn't seem to be too bullish on the Wildcats. But there are reasons to say maybe the models are wrong, and that's why?
Yeah, I mean, I would think of this as like, I say that like my bread and like my baby, if you will, is the in-season model, which is built on drive level data that I get from the same folks that provide data to the College Football Playoff Committee. The projection
strong flex.
Model, yeah. Well, like the projection model is like it's like a necessary evil. Like, so you don't know anything about teams as you come into the season. And if you just ran on like really small sample size and try to come up with a model that made any sense for like the first 6 weeks of the season, it would be crazy. Like you could have something like Coastal Carolina would be like the number one team in the model, right? So you need to weight it by things that you like that you know from out of the season, right? So recruiting rankings matter, not the actual ones that like 24/7 comes up with, but the actual ad, like, because they use like some internal funny math accounting with that. It is the actual just raw average stars per player. Like the average rating per player is actually more predictive, unsurprisingly. And then how you performed last year. So how good was your unit last year on offense, defense, special teams? And then, you know, how much are you returning, but I don't just use that on its own. It is weighted by, of course, like how good were you last year? So like, if you're returning a lot of players, like was that production actually any good? Arizona projects at the bottom of the Pac-12. I mean, that's absolutely true. The reasons, and we got into it a little bit, I say this about college, I think this is true of college football. I think this is true of any program in college football. You are one coach away from a major change in how, like either positive or negative in the way your program is going, right? Like people seem to act as if like it's all like preordained, like Alabama will always be good. Like Alabama hired Mike Shula and it didn't work, right? Like,
yeah.
So, but it's also true, like coordinators really matter, and like the on the field coaching really matters. And so I think Arizona, I think Marcel Yates, I thought he should have been fired. I don't think he should have been retained. I was out on Yates early, but you know, that replacement, I don't know that Paul Rhodes has to be amazing, but he should be an improvement, right?
You'd hope.
Well, he's unlikely to have his corners be 15 yards off on 3rd and 7.
Yeah, I mean, like, I am a little concerned because, like, he was coaching the pass defense for UCLA last year, and that pass defense was not good.
So it'd be 20 yards off on 3rd and 7. I can't wait till, like, first game of the season against Utah when it's a 3rd and 7. They're not even covering the receivers, and Brett just has an aneurysm.
Yeah. But I think the other part is that, and you guys know this, like going back to even before, I mean, Mike Stoops last year, like the defensive line production really fell off, and it has not recovered at any point. And we're going like a decade on poor defensive line play with Arizona. Now we are switching into a 3-4. That does bring concerns, right? Like we've talked about this on the
they don't have any linebackers, so.
Well, yeah, no, but the most important thing if you go to a 3-4, though, is like, do you have anybody that can play 2-gap, right? Like, and Arizona's brought in some guys in Lopez and Blackwell, you know, as well as Tapisoa, like that I think can potentially play two gap and clog it up for the linebackers. I would also say that, yes, I am concerned about the linebackers. I also think that people like forget what modern college football looks like, which is you're going to spend 70% of your time in nickel or dime. Right. Like you're not going to have four linebackers on the field all that often. Right. Like it's not to say that 30% of those plays when you do have seven in the box that like, you know, like just mail it in. Right. Like it's you got to be like, but I mean, Washington played 72% of their snaps in dime last season. Now, you know, Washington runs a very different defense than Arizona will. But like, you know, that Arizona, like if you're looking at like, you know, Bobby Wolf might be on the field more. Right. You know, as a nickel player than that. You know, that fourth linebacker may be. I mean, I do have concerns. I mean, I'm a little concerned that they haven't moved more of, because suddenly they have depth at defensive line. I mean, it's shocking. I went through my projected two deep and I was like, holy moly.
This isn't bad.
Right. Like, well, I'm surprised they haven't moved more of those lighter DNs into the linebacker room, you know, to try to account for, you know, some of the losses that they've had. But, you know, I mean, there's players that they're excited. I mean, it's all, I mean, that's going to be a big mystery for them, but I like the corners, you know, I think the safeties with some better coaching are, you know, could potentially be there. You know, and that's on that side of the ball. I mean, on the offensive side of the ball, you're looking at like, hopefully not a disaster. I mean, the offensive line, given the injuries they had, wasn't a disaster last season. I mean, the Pro Football Focus had them graded out at around 44, which is not great, but it's not, I mean, considering the makeup of the line, I mean, so, you know, and Lay staying and Morgan moving out to the outside of tackles, a positive, but I mean, Grant Cannell, I mean, people love Grant. I mean, I'm not like, you guys probably talked, I mean, Pro Football Focus has him as their most likely breakout player in all
stats
of college
guys
football.
Love him.
I mean,
the
like,
numbers guys
well,
tape, love
I mean, tape, I mean, tape, I mean, Pro Football Focus is a tape oriented organization. I mean, like the tape on Cannell is great.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, there's so many teams that when you look at like ahead of Arizona and they're to their benefit, they played in possibly the worst division in all of Power Five football in the Pac-12 South. Well, I mean, it's because you've got, I mean, you know, UCLA and Colorado are barely ahead of Arizona projected coming into this season. I actually, you know, like Colorado, we've seen this movie with Darren Chiaverini before at the offensive coordinator. I mean, you guys saw it, you know, 2 years ago when he was the OC, it got really ugly in Pac-12 play when he was not able to vary up his play calls enough and people knew what was coming. UCLA, it's been a ride in Westwood, but like they did not make they were really the one team that kept the coordinator that should have been fired. And that's Azanaro at their DC spot. I mean, he's been awful. And they kept him on there. And I mean, that's a real liability coming into this year. And then even, I mean, ASU projects to be good, but I mean, not as good as ASU fans think they, I mean, in like real time, like if ASU had to go out and play, instead of playing like a very bad Michigan State team in non-conference and then getting lucky and getting, you know, a Florida State team that was like utterly falling apart in a bowl game, you know, if they had to go out and play like an actual competent Power Five team, you know, you would see the level that ASU is really sitting at, you know.
I mean, ASU has the most hype for a team that keeps finishing 7-5 that I've ever seen in my life, aside from maybe Notre Dame. but you talked about a lot of the position groups, and Adam and I went through the roster over the course of the summer when we were trying to, you know, have content and kind of deep dive into position
and
groups.
And that's when Arizona had linebackers, but yeah,
true.
It was well, before times. Before
linebackers
times,
plural.
After times,
linebackers
or,
plural.
Yeah,
we still have a linebacker. no, but like you know, I think we both found ourselves looking at the roster position group by position group, and like, I don't think it's just the homerness saying like, there's maybe not superstars here, but you can see a path to success. And you talked a lot about the defensive line, especially with a three-man front. You see depth there. You see size. You see guys that if they live up to what they should, their, you know, their reputation and measurables would dictate, you would think that you can, you know, with depth, you can keep them on the field for only, you know, 20, 30 snaps a game, keep them fresh. and that can open up where you can scheme around that, even if you have, you know, more walk-on middle linebackers playing snaps. But, you know, if you're sucking up the blockers, I guess what I'm saying is, it's hard to convince people to not be pessimistic when a lot of that talent is returning, but they didn't seem to perform well last year. Do you think it's a question of the new coaching staff in terms of developing and scheming and just sheer coaching to get the most out of those guys that'll make enough of a difference to move the needle on wins?
I mean, I think, and I had a different view when I was, I mean, there were some Arizona fans that were not ready to let go of Rich Rod. I was, and I was, because I think Rich Rod cratered the roster. And so when I look back and I don't know, you guys remember that bowl game against Purdue, the 2017 game?
Yes.
And like at halftime, both teams are walking, like filing by Bruce Feldman, who's doing like his halftime show. And like Purdue was like a middle of the road Big Ten team that year. And like the size difference between the two teams was so obvious that even Feldman commented it on Twitter, like that the teams just looked like Arizona didn't look like a Power Five team. I mean, it didn't. Like Rich Rod had really, I mean, it's not to say, like, I think people, when you look at the recruiting rankings, of course, not much, like Arizona's going to recruit what they're going to, like the star level that they're going to recruit. But like, I think if you look at the body types that Kevin Sumlin has brought in, they're very different. We were having this conversation with Hip Lede, who's a guy that we like to talk to on the pod. He covers Oregon, but he watches a lot of tape. And the body types that Arizona has been bringing in with Sumlin are different. That's not to say, like, I mean, I like fully on, like, there's some excuse for it because it was late in the hiring cycle. But I mean, it's worth hitting on again. Like, the defensive staff was awful. I mean, the Hawaii game was not. I mean, the Hawaii game in particular, like, you could see, I mean, Hawaii, I mean, they do run all those option routes, but, like, you could just see, I mean, Hawaii wasn't doing anything sexy or sophisticated. They were running posts and bend routes, and, like, the linebackers and the safeties were totally lost.
And the ball was there. I saw it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, was what the slot receivers from Hawaii were doing. And, you know, that I do think that, you know, that for Arizona's defense in particular, there's an opportunity because they've been so bad under Yates. They have been consistently one of the very worst Power Five defenses in the country. You know, for them to take a real step forward with some better coaching and development that they really didn't have. And you guys hit on it too. I mean, with, you know, if Lopez and Blackwell and Tapasoa and, you know, let's say, you know, mix in some Terry in there, you know, if they can hold their, you know, hold up and eat up blockers, you know, you don't have to have the great, I mean, if they are able to execute that, you know, like Pandy, who's quite talented and is probably, as long as he doesn't, I mean, like, knock on wood, doesn't get injured. I mean, Arizona should be okay up the middle, right? Like, they're not going to be great. I mean, but it's going to depend more. And I said, like, if you're in a 3-4 and your defensive line stinks, doesn't matter how good your linebackers are going to be, because people are going to be coming for, like, they're going to have guards coming free, you know, like, you know, to and tight ends coming free to block them and seal them off. So it's, I mean, really for Arizona, like, it's not, I mean, would the defense project higher? Would I have even more optimism with a new coaching staff and the linebackers there with the additions they have brought on the defensive line? Yes, I would. You know, does this take some of that, you know, optimism off? Absolutely. Do I think Arizona could, like, I mean, they grade out, like, they're projected at 74, which is an improvement off of where they had been, which was, you know, heading back towards, you know, 100 or lower last year. You know, if they could get into, like, into that range of, like, you know, in 60, just being a very bad Power Five defense instead of a horrifically bad power. I mean, that sounds like small, like, that sounds like, but that kind of improvement, along with what I think is some, you know, very reasonable expected offensive improvement with a quarterback that fits the system and is expected to be a breakout player, you know, like, that kind of thing starts to get you into, you combine those things where you're, you know, both units might beat their projection, and you're looking at a team that could suddenly, you know, like, it may not show up in some amazing win total, right? Like, there's not non-conference games here to pad your wins, but it may show up as a team that suddenly in beta rank is, you know, closer to 50 than 80. And that's, I mean, that that for me is real progress and optimism. Now, it may not assuage a lot of Arizona fans who are not happy after the way things have gone, but I get it. Like,
and we're joined by Rob Bowen, Sharp College Football. You know him from Wildcat Radio at times, 12-pack radio, does the beta rank that he just mentioned there. And that's kind of how Brad and I have talked about this, where the defense doesn't have to be great. It doesn't have to be Desert Swarm, as long as the offense is as good as we think it is. You talked about how the defense, where it kind of seems to improve, you know, with the defensive line. Obviously, if you have good defensive linemen, then middling linebackers can look better, right? When they have just clear paths to the ball carrier, to the quarterback where they need to go. Offensively, though, everyone knows it starts with Grant Cannell. That's where the optimism begins, is that here's a guy who is tailor-made for this offense that Noah Mazzone wants to run. They still have good running backs, some really intriguing talent at receiver, and an offensive line that's experienced and maybe even has some depth right now. But is there, like, when we say the offense is going to carry this team, is that a very reasonable take, and is that really to be expected? Like, can we take that as a given and for granted that this offense is going to score 30-plus points a game?
I'm going to throw some caution there, because one of the things that has really hurt Arizona's offense, you know, the last couple of years is that the defense has been atrocious and the special teams have been atrocious. And that usually means Arizona's starting field position that their offense is given is also atrocious. So like if you're starting, your average is at the 25 yard line for your starting position for your drives or worse, like you got a lot of field to cover to put up points. If you're an average fan and you want to look at expecting to put up a certain number of points a game, you know, you really also need the special teams, which have been nightmarishly bad under Springer. And then the defense to carry some weight too. But Tate was just an awful fit, just an awful. And I don't even know, like, cause I don't know if you guys had this experience. A lot of Arizona fans, I'm sure, had this experience. Like, I used to sit there with Anu Solomon, and I would just watch him hold the football, and I'm like, man, like, just get rid of the ball. Like, why are we holding the ball? And then, after, you know, Solomon was out and it was Dawkins, I'd be like, gosh, like, we're just holding the freaking football. Just throw the ball. But Tate does it too. And I finally realized, I was like, this is coaching. Like, this is actually how they're being coached to play. Like, they're being coached to look for deeper shots that should be open because it's such a run dominant offense that the running game has to get going. If they can get the running game, you know, with the, what was the read option going, then, you know, they should be able to get some of it. So they just Tate just held the ball, and you literally cannot do that in Noah Mazzone's offense. Cause like in Rich Rod's offense, the backs were often staying in to block, to give the quarterback extra time, you know, that is not like in Noah Mazzone's offense, like the back's going out on a route. Like it's usually been that the tight end has been staying in, to provide extra pass protection. But, you know, the fact that like Tate would not be processing his reads necessarily terribly quickly and not getting rid of the ball. I mean, I think one of the things that, I mean, you could, and you guys saw this, Cannell sometimes got the ball out a little too quick, you know, like he felt some phantom pressure sometimes.
He's a freshman.
Yeah. But I think the real knock that people had on, you know, Gunnell last year, I mean, he threw a lot with his arm. His footwork wasn't necessarily, I mean, and it was funny because people would say that he didn't have a strong arm, and it was really that he wasn't setting his base and really, you know, as Mike Leach would say, he's not, I mean, this is a family podcast, I suppose, but he's not setting his hips and throwing, throwing with his pelvis, if you will. That's what Cannell, you know, spent a lot of time this offseason working on, you know, working with the quarterback coach. So if that's the case, you know, like he's going to be able to make more throws. He should be more experienced in the offense, but you guys saw it last. I mean, like Cannell, that Oregon game, I was there. Oregon has a phenomenal defensive line. They were, you know, Cannell was only hitting short stuff because that was what was available, but he was getting the ball. I mean, Tate, when he was in, it was just negative play after negative play after negative play. I mean, Cannell wasn't getting first downs, but he wasn't taking sacks and running around out of bounds behind the line of scrimmage. And, you know, all the things, you know, that we saw, you know, with Tate, and in a lot of ways too, with Mazzone. I mean, this is the first time he's had a real quarterback since that fits his system since Josh Rosen at UCLA. I mean, he came in at Texas A&M after that big exodus of quarterbacks that that left, you know, Kyler Murray and Kyle Allen and those guys. So, you know, this is actually a shot at redemption even for Mazzoni, who's also sort of fallen off the map a little bit as an OC.
But even Arizona's offense 2 years ago, the first year that someone was in Tucson, like Arizona's obviously with a choke job or missed field goal away from making a bowl game, and people be feeling pretty good about them, having won, I think it would have been like three of their last four games or something like that with a Territorial Cup win. Last year, obviously, Tate regressed some for some reason, yep. And the offensive line got banged up, and therefore the running game fell apart, and the offense wasn't as good. But Noel Mazzoni gets a lot of criticism from people, and I understand because Khalil Tate wasn't the same player. You know, the last two seasons he was his big breakout season. But at the same time, Mazzoni has coached some pretty good college quarterbacks and some really dynamic offenses. Like, the guy knows how to coach, and you have to think that with a quarterback who fits his system, like Gunnell ostensibly does, and the weapons they have, that should be better. And all of a sudden you're going to say, oh, Noel Mazzoni knows what he's doing.
I mean, Noel Mazzoni made Brock Osweiler a second-round NFL draft pick.
Yeah, I mean, think about how, I mean, that UCLA offense he had, even with Brett Hundley, you know, that where Hundley really understood that offense, that graded out in beta rank as a top five offense. You know, like he's had it where it's, you know, it's really worked before for him. Clear. I mean, you know, like obviously when you have like talent like Phillip Rivers, you know, that kind of thing. But I mean, I think Arizona, you're going to have to develop players. You're going to have like, but people forget like what, how highly recruited Gunnell was. Like, there were a lot of places that wanted Grant Gunnell. You know, like, he really fell off the map once he committed to Arizona and stuck with it.
It happens.
Yeah. But he was a huge get for Arizona. And, you know, like, a lot of the guys that, you know, I mean, it is, and we had this conversation on Arizona doesn't sign a lot of guys that are, like, you know, four stars in some recruiting services, you know, and so it needs, you know, like, they never worked out under Rich Rod, right? Like, all those four stars from the Rich Rod era never quite panned out. Gunnell looks like he...
Marcus Griffin has had a great career. What are you talking about?
I mean, like, they're all super, yeah, I mean, they all seem like super nice guys, but like, they just never quite panned out on the field. I mean, Arizona, I think you're gonna, what I want to keep an eye on, and if you're, you know, for the listeners out there to keep an eye on, is, you know, what really fell apart for Arizona's offense last year beyond Tate regressing was like the outside zone, the run. You know, Arizona's a zone run team. They do mix in some power, I mean, some, you know, power zone as well with pulls. But the outside zone fell apart last year. They were just not successful running outside zone, which had really been a lot of their bread and butter, you know, the year before. And then it was a lot more just on Tate to try to win the game, and we kind of saw how that all went. Like, my hope is that the offensive line improves. I mean, with more steady play. I mean, Lay is I think he gets talked up a lot as a, you know, is potentially a pro prospect. He was not a fit at tackle. Like, he was getting outplayed at tackle. He doesn't have the athleticism to be able to play tackle in a Power Five conference. Morgan, people rave about the athleticism, so. I mean, that move for Lay inside the guard, I think, is a good move for the offense. You know, and they do have, I mean, like, more than, like, when you actually go through the two deep, you can actually put together a two deep for the offensive line.
When two guys get injured on the same play, Arizona might be able to withstand that a little bit better than last season.
Well, that's really the, like, when you talk about, like, the horrendous, I mean, beyond the fact that Rich Rod didn't recruit any receivers, you know, tall enough to play a pickup basketball game, or... You know, some of the other, you know, misses, like, the real problem spots that someone inherited were the fact that they didn't have any offensive line depth or any D-line depth when he inherited the program. Like, they're just now getting to the flat, like, they're, you know, the place where you can actually just train people on one position and actually have a two deep where guys are not having to cross train on three positions on the line. You know?
Yeah, that hits on something I've been banging the drum on all since I joined Wildcat Radio 2.0, is that I think people dramatically in college football underestimate depth and overrate, like, you know, I'd rather have a class of 25 3-stars that all hit and are productive than one or two 4-stars that are pretty good guys, 4 guys that work out okay, and then 10 flops, right? You can't build any success if you have no depth, and I feel like someone has... someone in staff seems to have had a plan the last year or two to really focus on, you know, taking the old man approach of building from the inside out, getting the line depth, working your way outwards, getting a good quarterback in place, and then fill, you know, hopefully you can supplement that down the road and or develop on the edges a little more with some star guys or some high upside guys. And I feel like that's the plan. They may not be getting everybody there that they would like to, but I can see the progress. But I'm curious to hear your perspective on that.
Yeah, no, I think that's, you know, that I don't know that, and I didn't know that someone was the guy, and I would not have, I certainly would not have hired Yates. And Mazzoni was probably also not the high, I mean, like, they're not the hires I would have made. But I think that even if they don't work out, that the roster that they're going to pass on is going to be in a very different place. Like, there's better roster management, right? And at Arizona, Arizona's going to have to develop players. Like, this is just not, I mean, everyone sort of has to develop players to be successful at the level that they want to be. You know, but like Arizona, you're not going to go out and nail like a bunch of amazing recruits that are like can't miss players for the most part. But it's also true that, I mean, and I say this as someone that actually really knows how accurate recruiting rankings are because I test it all the time. the guys at the top, like the recruiting rankings are more accurate at the top because those guys get a lot more evaluation. They go to more camps. You know, they have more write-ups on them, right? Like they have more top schools evaluating them. It is very hard, you know, like to be able to really point your finger at and say like this three-star offensive lineman is vastly different than this other three-star. I mean, the grades get a little, like the confidence interval, as you'd say, like the, you know, the variance around them starts to get high in that level, right? So you have to trust your coaching staff, right? Like you have to trust that your coaching staff can identify guys that are going to fit. You know, if you're in Arizona, you have to trust that they can identify guys that are going to fit what they want to do, that they believe that they can coach up and develop. And I, you know, I think that maybe they, you know, there are still some questionable fits on the coaching staff for me. I mean, I was shocked that they kept Springer on. I think they like him as a recruiter, but he really hasn't shown much of anything as a special teams coach. I do have questions about having Mazzoni's kid on as a wide receiver coach, if only because, I mean, I just, I haven't seen enough out of the wide receivers, right? I mean, and part of the reason that the outside zone stopped working as well is actually one of the things that Rich Rod really coached really well, and his coaches coached really well, was blocking downfield by the wide receivers, which is unsurprising for a run-oriented offense. But, you know, part of what really helped, you know, that, you know, someone's first season outside zone work so well was that they had a bunch of receivers that had been coached by Rich Rod to block downfield so well. You know, like that's fine. Like we can have the trade-off, right? Like the receivers don't have to be as good at downfield blockers. They do have to get better at being receivers. And I think that's a big, I mean, like if there's a big question mark, I think about the offense coming in this year, like you feel really good about Gunnell. You feel pretty confident about the offensive line. I love the running back room. I want to drop the tight end off the field. I want to run 20 personnel and have one back stay in the block, but you don't know which one and the other one running routes, right? Like, I think
that's just it though. Like if you're listening to Wildcat Radio 2.0 right now, you're probably an Arizona fan and it's easy to be down on this team. And Brett and I have done, I guess, our modest best to be like, hey, they're not the worst. But talking like that's like, there's so much to like about them on paper for a team that won 4 games last season and 5 the year before. Like, it doesn't seem to make sense, especially when the recruiting hasn't been at, you know, a top half of the Pac-12 level. But from what it sounds like what you're saying, and you do a lot of the research, you see the numbers and all that, where it's like maybe this team, this roster, is better in year 3 of the Kevin Sumlin era than people think it should be based on the talent they have brought in and the way it's being coached. Like, is that accurate? Because it sounds really optimistic, even though I know none of us are saying they're going to be a contender for the conference, but like they're not bad.
No, I mean, seriously though, if you like subtract Marcell Yates and 70% of the snaps that you're giving to Khalil Tate, and like there's improvement. Like,
is that simple just, though? Like, is it really that simple? Like, we're saying the roster was probably defensively, the roster was better. It wasn't good enough to overcome bad coaching, but with decent coaching, the defense will just inherently improve. And by having Grant Gunnell be the full-time starter, the offense is going to run smoothly. Like, is it that simple?
Well, I think people underestimate how bad Arizona really got to be. I mean, like last season. No, I mean, this sounds. I mean, that sounds really harsh, but I mean,
they were bad. They were really
bad. I mean, the defense under Yates, I mean, they had years where they were finishing in like 120 overall in defense. I mean, they finished 85 last season in beta rank defensively. I mean, that's a hideous, that is a hideous defense. And that kind of like, but here's what you think, like Arizona, even with some recruiting misses and, the real troubled roster that someone inherited, like the talent level isn't 85. It's just not. Like, there's some really bad coaching that gets you to 85. Like, I'm not saying that Arizona is going to be, like, a top 25 defense. Like, do not. Like, I don't even know that Arizona gets to be a top 25 offense next season. Like, but if Arizona, like, the Pac-12 is so bad. Like, the bottom of the Pac-12 South is so bad. If Arizona managed to be in the 50s on offense and defense, you know, like, they are, not only are they, I mean, and let's just say for fun, somehow Jeremy Springer managed to coach special teams also into the 50s.
Hey, I heard their scrimmage last week, Haversick kicked a couple 50-yard field goals, and the punting wasn't awful. That's what I saw.
Oh my God, like the punting. I mean, just the punting. It's like a combo. So, but if you took that, if you took and said every unit for Arizona, and I grade Power 5 programs on a 1 to 65 scale. So if you just said every unit for Arizona was in the 50s, which would be just bad for a Power 5 team on a 1 to 65 scale, that would still put you at a clear fourth in the Pac-12 South. And you would probably only be like a 4-point underdog to Arizona State. Like that.
Well,
low bar.
And Arizona State is one sprained ankle for Jaden Daniels away from starting a walk-on quarterback.
Well, I mean, what I don't understand is, like, everyone's focusing on the offense for Arizona State, which actually sucks last season. Like, the defense was decent. Well,
they
and
scored 24 points
better.
Against Arizona. They weren't a good offense. Like, and that was with a first-round draft pick at receiver with Eno Benjamin.
Yeah.
Like, 24 against Arizona. We already talked about how bad their defense was last season. That's beautiful. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's as, it's not, but I mean, it's not to say that, like, I mean, so some of these are sort of hesitant. Like, I am confident if Grant Gunnell is healthy all season, Arizona's offense is going to beat their projection. I am confident that with a new defensive staff in place, that the defense should also likely beat their projection. But you start to get into that in the question of, like, by how much, right? And, like, for Arizona, for me, like, on the offensive side, I mean, yes, it's a lot of it's on the line, but, like, the receivers also have to take a step forward from where they have been. You know, I thought Rich Rod was just awful at recruiting wide receiver talent. You know, and we've got some new players in and some new talent and, you know, some new coaching. Like, we've got to see them we've got to see some improvement. And guys like Curry, you know, like, they've got a hit. Like, Arizona can't have a guy where they actually go out and sign a 4-star that a lot of programs wanted. Like, for Arizona, he's got to produce. Yeah. You know, like, they've got to develop him and get him along, get him out there. And then, you know, if that could work, then the options, like, if the offensive line's better, maybe you don't need to leave the tight end in to block. And I know there was, like, an article of, like, yeah, they're going to throw to the tight ends. I'm like, well, that's fine. But, like, the running back room is actually has a bunch of guys that are good at catching the football. Like, let's put them on the field. But I do think that for Arizona, like, more than, like, because I think a lot of people are sort of higher on Colorado than I think is warranted because...
Oh, they're terrible.
I mean, I have watched Colorado prior to this year. I have watched their spring games, and, like, behind Montez, they didn't have anybody at quarterback. I don't like I don't like their offensive coordinator hire. We've talked about, I mean, Thompson Robinson's still the quarterback at UCLA. You know, like, there's room for a team with a solidified quarterback position, you know, and maybe the chance for, I mean, like, not a good defense, but not a awful defense to make a move up in the Pac-12 South. And I think it could be Arizona.
So that's Rob Barron, beta rank, sharp beta rank, 12 pack radio. talks about how good Arizona's going to be. His own system has Arizona winning 1.5 games this season. So don't read the numbers. Listen to Rob. Feel better about the Wildcats. They'll be mediocre. And that would be a step forward probably from the last couple of seasons, definitely last season. But, Rob, before we let you go, is there anything else you want to talk about or anything you want to plug that you got coming up, or, like, the floor is yours?
Yeah, I mean, so we're doing, at Sharp College Football, we've been trying to build up some video. I mean, that's what we've been working on in the pandemic.
I know that it took a little while to, like, switch the camera from, like, widescreen to, like, vertical, I feel like. That was a thing one time.
Oh yeah, so no, I had I'd been like when I was doing it on our phone, like Brian had like started doing like Periscope on the phone, and now like I have like an actual setup. And
oh, nice.
So like on Saturday mornings at 6:30 every morning, I get up and do something called the Saturday Six, and I preview six close good game, you know, what project to be good games in college football from an advanced stats perspective, and I try to spend 3 minutes on each game, try to make it quick, and walk through the numbers. That will help decide the game, coming in each week. And it's been a lot of fun getting up and doing that. So if you you can catch that on Periscope, and you can follow us at Sharp College Football, and you can catch it and see it there. Or it'll be up on our YouTube channel, so you can watch. So if you're watching, game day or the big noon Saturday for Fox, on the commercial breaks, you can flip on the Saturday Six and catch a little bit more of an advanced stats perspective rather than the yakety yak on the games. Like it's been a lot of fun to help build out. So and check out the site sharpcollegefootball.com because we have projected spreads up for every game. And I will say this because a lot of people were bummed. Like Arizona got a tough draw with Washington, but like I'm glad they got Utah first because Utah replaces nearly everyone, and I would rather play them early than late.
Rob Barwin, thanks again for joining us. And when we come back, let's talk a little more Arizona football. We're back, and Brett, the one thing from talking to Rob there, like, I know we can be accused of being homers, right? We're fans. We want them to do well. Rob's a numbers guy, and computers aren't fans of anybody. You know, we've all seen Terminator. Computers hate us all. So the fact that he's somewhat optimistic like us, not that Arizona's going to be the best team in the conference, but that they're going to be better than people think, it's kind of comforting. Thanks, Rob.
He thinks that they're probably going to outdo his own model because it only projects 1.5 wins. But also, I guess we just have to get comfortable with an Arizona football team that getting two wins this season is outperforming people's expectations. But I know you put it in your Desert Swarm picks. Like you picked three games.
I picked three.
I don't think that's entirely crazy. Other than I think there's a challenge of the iteration of the seventh game, right? Depending on if we win two games, we'd have to have won two games leading up to that iteration, which means you're not playing the last place team and probably in the North.
Yeah.
Which maybe is the thing that comes back and bites you, but.
If you put the over under at 1.5, I'm taking the over. If you put the over under at 2.5, I would have a real tough time because we've talked about it. Like, I don't think Colorado's better than Arizona. By the time that game gets played, who knows what either of these teams are going to look like if that game even gets played. We could talk about that too, some of the pessimism there that's come from the Pac-12. But like Arizona at home should be better than Colorado. UCLA, also in the back half of the schedule, is not. They don't figure to be particularly good this season. So Arizona could conceivably beat them if Arizona is an improved football team from last season. And if you win those two games, then I'm saying you beat ASU to end the season because why not? Because I think it's Colorado or it's UCLA, then Colorado. If you've won those two games, you're on a winning streak. You're feeling good. You're probably playing decent football. You can come home and beat ASU, who even Rob is a little bit less high on. The computers aren't as high on ASU as a lot of ASU fans are. So, like, I don't think it's that unreasonable, but also, like, the computer model, there's certain things we don't know. Like, the defensive line, talking about Roy Lopez, Aaron Blackman, the guys they added, that could be a strength. And if your defensive line is certainly not a weakness, but even a strength, then that makes your linebackers have an easier time. So the place that could be a weakness for Arizona might be kind of shielded by an improved defensive line. And just similar to basketball, like we were talking about, there's a lot of unknowns with this football team. And in a mostly good way, I think, because they weren't good last season. So if you don't know that they're bad, I guess there's a chance they can be good. But as the season, we're a couple weeks away now from the first game against Utah. Just, we're not going to tell you to go to MyBookie and bet on Arizona to win six games. Like, that's not going to be the thing. But, there's no reason to be so pessimistic and think, oh, they're going to be a winless team or they're easily the worst team in the conference, because I don't think any of us believe that.
Yeah, I think this year's Arizona Wildcats football team is going to be about showing progress, and how much progress they show is going to dictate Kevin Sumlin's future, right?
Yeah.
And maybe two wins with competitive losses in, you know, half of the remaining ones is enough progress. And hopefully that can beget better recruiting. And, like, there's been, you know, pretty good success with I'm blanking on the receiver from Chandler that just got an Ohio State offer.
Graves, yeah.
Yeah, if they can hold on to him and continue to, like, they're very much focusing on the in-state guys for the next year's class. And there's enough talent there that if you can build a little bit of a wall around the state of Arizona that neither ASU or Arizona has done effectively for the last however many years, you know, that kind of progress might be enough, especially in a tight financial situation, shall we say, to allow the process to kind of keep going on the Kevin Sumlin train. And then I think the big factor, and I think Rob touched on this a bit, is it's almost impossible to quantify until you get on the field and see the impact of the new coaching staff from a development scheme, you know, just, you know, the minutiae of your position group coaching, right? If, you know, the defensive line, we talk about how they have the talent, it would seem, they just didn't produce. Maybe a more experienced coach can maximize that talent, and having, you know, a productive defensive line not only opens up things for your linebackers, but we've got pretty decent young corners that, like, if they can cover in man, then you can get creative with generating a pass rush. Or if Jalen Harris can generate a pass rush, or Cobenna Watson, you know, like, there's a path to success there. But it's until we get to see it on the field, it's all just speculation, right?
Well, expecting players who weren't very good last season to all of a sudden become good, that's optimism, right? But looking at someone like Aaron Blackwell or Roy Lopez, who have had success at previous stops, or looking at a coaching staff that, by all accounts, will be improved, like, those are tangible things that you can expect that. That's reasonable. That's not being a homer. That's just saying, like, yeah, like, Roy Lopez was good. Aaron Black was a pretty solid player. These guys have experience. They have size. You know, they have something that Arizona didn't have last season. So, like, and if enough of those things work out, and enough of the guys who you need to take steps for, like a Jalen Harris, for instance, you know, now as an outside linebacker with standing up instead of hand in the dirt, like, if guys like that can take a step forward, then you might have something. And this is such a weird season anyway. Like Rob mentioned, like, if you're gonna get Utah, I'd rather get them week one, because they're replacing a lot themselves, and there's so many unknowns for so many teams. Like, you know, he was saying too, like, USC is probably the only team on Arizona's schedule who's like, nope, not going to happen. You know, like, and probably Washington too.
Yeah.
But USC is like the only, like, oh yeah, there's no chance there, because they're bringing so much back. All right. Like, they have enough sure things where you're like, okay, yeah, that's a good football team.
The delta in talent is just, they'll overcome.
They should. So other than that, though, like, if Arizona comes out, even, like, the first three games, the tougher games, and they play competitively, then it gives you hope for the back half of that schedule to be like, yeah, they could win these games, because their last three games are probably against the three weakest teams on their schedule, in my opinion. Now, maybe ASU's better than we're all thinking, but certainly two of those last three games are their weakest opponents this season. So if they can look like a competent, improved football team over the first few games, then it gives you a belief that, yeah, they can definitely win those games. And to your point, Brett, like, it's not necessarily about, like, I guess they're already bowl eligible. You know, they announced that. Like, you don't have to be 500. So, like, congratulations, Arizona's bowl eligible again for the first time in a couple of years. But it's not necessarily about being great. It's about showing progress. And in this case, progress, like, it's sad to say in year three of Kevin Sumlin, progress is measured in, are you competitive? But that's where they're at. And if they're competitive with Kevin Sumlin recruits, with guys that they brought in, him and his staff brought into the program, then it gives you reason to believe that they do have things going in the right direction. But we have to see it.
Well, if you see progress with a relatively young roster in a lot of key positions, you know, and the guys that they have in the recruiting class, and you leave some spots open to fill in some gaps, you know, they got like 9 linebackers in next year's class. So the linebacker depth is going to be there all of a sudden next year. You'll still have Grant Cannell. You'll still have, you know, plenty in the running back room, plenty of talent at the receiver spot, plenty of talent on returning on defense other than some of the linemen. You know, there's if you see enough progress, you feel good. I think Rob touched on that too. Like the following season, you can say like, hey, that can be a chance for that team to actually be a truly competitive team, not just showing improvement, right?
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see. That first game is scheduled for what, November 7th, I believe, is kickoff against Utah. So that's we're recording. That's a couple of weeks away. Obviously, like Merton Hanks, who's with the Pac-12, kind of said like they're not expecting every team to play all six, I guess, plus one games because we've seen what's happened around the country. And I guess that's the overarching theme is like, okay, the schedule's there, and we're talking about Arizona playing these games, winning these games, or being competitive in them. Well, hopefully the games happen, you know, because we're still seeing it over other schools across the country. Other games have been canceled left and right because they've had COVID-19 issues. And, you know, as the Pac-12, they took a long time to get started, which left them little room for error. Like, if they have to postpone a game, they're canceling a game. They can't really move it around. So,
zero room for error.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't blame them. Maybe waiting as long as they did allowed them to put in a system in place and the protocols in place where they can get through this. But obviously, there's a virus out there, and when more people are around more people, it tends to spread easier. So, you know, hopefully that happens. But as we talk about, like, the one thing I do wonder is, like, if the Territorial Cup, it comes down to it, and Arizona is healthy enough to play and ASU doesn't have enough players and it has to be canceled, does Arizona get the cup? Because, like, hey, they were good to go. Like, win the cup by default, bring it back to Tucson, and everyone's happy.
Or do they just send the Territorial Cup to the Wuhan province of China?
And it stays there for a year. But we are a couple weeks away from what should be the start of this season, a very interesting season, a season that most people are expecting nothing out of Arizona, and yet, like Rob talked about, like we've talked about, like there's reason to feel like they're going to be better than the worst projections. Not like no one's projecting them to be great, so we don't have to worry about talking people down from being too hyped up. But there are some things to look at and say, you know what? There's pieces here. There's some intriguing talent, some guys who, if they develop properly and with the right coaching, could be something. So, everyone, we appreciate you listening to Wildcat Radio 2.0 today. Thanks to Rob Bowen from Sharp College Football, does the beta rank. We appreciate having him on and him sharing his expertise. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at Wildcat Radio AZ, and you're subscribed to our channel, appearance Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, everywhere you can get a podcast, basically. You're going to find Wildcat Radio 2.0 because it's not just our podcast. We have other shows going on throughout the week. You'll find Bryant and the guys, too. They do a lot more of the gambling stuff, helpful, you know, which is good, you know, because that's, you know, people like that. Like, I tend to bet more with my heart than my head, so I stay out of it for the most part. But, like, Wildcat Radio, as the season starts up again, and you guys know this, you've been listening for a while, like, that's when it gets fun, really fun for us, because we like talking about the games, we like talking about what's going on, and there's actually going to be things to talk about. So that's good.
I'm looking forward to the, can you believe the guy did the thing with the thing?
That's coming probably, let's see, the first game's November 7th, so probably November 11th or so you can expect that show or that commentary, right?
It's going to be gold content.
It will be. So stay tuned for that. Stay healthy, stay safe out there, wear your masks, and remember to bear down.
Bear down.